Test, test, okay. Holy crap. Hello. Hello. To all of my, to all of my not yet existent, but hopefully one day soon to be existent listeners. Not really talking to anyone right now, I guess, but hopefully maybe one day. My name is Joe Cole, and I really have no clue what I'm doing. Well, I mean, technically, I'm currently sitting alone, talking into a microphone in my bedroom. My childhood bedroom, because I live with my parents. Yeah, so this room does not see much action. Does not see much action. Unless it comes from the Because You Watched World War Z genre section of my Netflix account. Then it could get pretty crazy up in here. But other than that, pretty actionless. But anyway, I had an idea, and I felt compelled and inspired to try to carry this idea out. Because of the recent, well, I guess technically not too recent, but relatively recent comparatively to other communication mediums. But yeah, the relatively recent immersion of the communication platform called the podcast. I am a huge fan of WTF with Marc Maron, and just the whole long form interview based radio and podcast show specifically. I mean, obviously Howard Stern, obviously, because who is the king and pioneer of this all. But yeah, I've just been really, really in awe of WTF and what Marc Maron's been able to do, using his show to connect to people, and to connect to his guests, and to make us all feel, a little less lonely and a little more okay, with this whole life deal that we were all handed and are lucky to have. But yeah, and you know, other shows too, like the Nerdist podcast and NPR stuff, like Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and Invisibilia, which isn't an interview show, but is awesome. And you know what? If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you should check those shows out, because they're great. Really, really great. And podcasts are free, because you could just go to the podcast app of your iPhone or whatever you got and just download them for free, because podcasts are an ad revenue based thing. So yeah, just download it for free, and hopefully maybe that's what you'll do with this, because why wouldn't you? It's for free. Free. But yeah, anyway, I guess I should explain a little bit of what my intent is with whatever it is that I'm trying to do right now. As you could tell, I am oozing with confidence. But yeah, before I start to delve into what I hope and want this to be, I should probably preface with a little background about myself. Like I said, my name's Joe Cole, and I was born and raised in Pequannock, New Jersey, which is a really small town in Jersey, actually where Derek Jeter is from. Derek Jeter was born here. He was here for a little before he moved to Michigan, I think. Yeah, he was born in the same hospital that I was in, Chilton Hospital, and born in the same hospital room as me as well. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have that information, but I like to think so. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that is our only claim to fame. But anyway, yeah. That's our town. Oh, and also, French Montana has a house here in our town. And I'm sorry if I'm blowing up your spot, French, but that is a thing. So anyway, yeah, I grew up here, and I just recently graduated from college from Quinnipiac University with a major in film and a minor in music, which is why I'm currently sitting in my bedroom and not making a lot of money at some type of corporate business office cubicle type place. Anyway, I felt compelled to do what I'm trying to do right now, really because of the vet, what I just said, and the current situation that I'm in, and not because it's the situation that I'm in, but because of the probable ubiquitous nature of other recent college graduates' current situations. I am sure that there are people my age, like throughout the country, who are currently in the same place that I'm in. That they just graduated college and they're trying to forget about the complete awesomeness of the 4 years that they just experienced in hopes of not being overwhelmed with intensely sad feelings of nostalgia that propels you to tweet things at your old college friends like, oh, I miss this. I miss us and take me back. But yeah, over the past years, and obviously I'm not breaking new ground with providing this information, but the college degree has become, over the past few years, has become ubiquitous and somewhat universally obtainable. And more and more college graduates aren't getting jobs out of college right away and are kind of in the spot where I'm currently at, where maybe they want to take some time to figure out what they're inspired by and what they feel they want to do and could be able to do comfortably and happily for an extended period of time. Sounds crazy, right? And that is what I think is a significant divide between the generation before mine, I guess people my parents' age, is that they just wanted to bunker down and get to work and provide. Maybe I'm generalizing, but I feel like people in my generation, the millennial generation, if you will, they have what can be extrinsically viewed as a selfish pursuit of self-fulfillment, I think. And there may be a little of that. But I think it's more of a determination to do or create or help to make something that's worthwhile. And that's what the show is about. Not for me to create something that's worthwhile. I'm not trying to blow smoke up my own ass, but to hopefully give other millennials an outlet to explain and rationalize what their intent in life is. And the name of the show is called That Millennial Life. And there is an already existing podcast that is the most popular and downloaded podcast on iTunes, I think, or at least it used to be, I don't know, it probably still is, called This American Life, but NPR does. And did I rip off the name of that show? Yeah, probably. And do I understand that that's hacky? Yes. Yes, I do. Do I think that the name of the show matters because the content won't be anything alike, and as long as the content is good, then the name of the show shouldn't really make a difference? That question was so long that I don't even know if yes or no is the correct response to be on the side of the point that I'm trying to make, but you get what I'm saying, people, I hope. I changed this from This American Life to That, to That Millennial Life, because this implies that there is a universal and mutual understanding of what is being talked about, a commonality, and there isn't. It's That Millennial Life. Because what I want the show to be, and I think millennials get a bit of a bad rap, and are generally misunderstood, and the reason I think this is, and maybe I'm biased because I am one, but I think that the gap between our generation and the generation before us had the most significant gap there ever has been between subsequent generations. Meaning the millennials are a lot more different than Generation X, than Generation X was different than the baby boomers. And that obviously has to do with with the reason that you're all able to listen to me right now, which is the rapid and still ongoing boom of technological advancement that we were innately a part of. But anyway, there's a lot of negative stereotypes associated with millennials, and there's some positive ones too. But some of the negative ones are like that we're lazy, and that we're self-involved, and that we had everything handed to us. The everybody gets a trophy generation, and our accessibility to technology, and how that allows us to be able to edit everything that we say, so that when it comes to legitimate off-the-cuff conversation, that when it comes to legitimate off-the-cuff conversation, we are incapable because of our ability to edit. And that all of these things that I just mentioned are going to prohibit us from being able to have any type of significant accomplishment. And maybe that's embellished a tad in terms of... Oh, got a text. But maybe that's embellished a tad in terms of what people think, but yeah. So what my idea is for this show is to interview different guests who are around my age, and therefore millennials themselves, about how they feel and who they are, and about their upbringings, and how maybe their upbringings counter some of the stereotypes that are associated with millennials, or even align with those stereotypes, and if they do align, how they have tried or are trying to actively or inactively overcome those stereotypes. Does that even make sense? But yeah, to maybe show... or to maybe to bunk some of the stereotypes and to show or to make us a little less misunderstood, and maybe show that we aren't all useless and that we're just like anyone else on this earth, trying to be happy and be happy with ourselves, be happy with the world that we've created for ourselves, and with the people we surround ourselves with, and in our environments. And that's really what the point of this all is, isn't it? And the reason I thought the podcast format would be a proper communication outlet to do this is because the ways in which a lot of millennials are publicly getting their voices out there are through the internet, but the majority of these outlets are short form, you know, like things with like Twitter, where you can only use 140 characters, and whatever else there is, like fucking Snapchat and Yik Yak, Grindr. No, people don't use Grindr to get their voices out there. They use Grindr to get something else out there. Tinder, whatever else there is. Yeah, I mean, I guess Facebook, but you can write longer stuff on Facebook, but you're still inhibited because it really isn't your actual voice being heard. So I thought that this more long form, vocal type of format would give more of an opportunity for people to express who they are and what makes them tick if they so choose to be involved. So yeah, anyway, holy shit. So yeah, this is our first episode. On the episode today, we had Mustafa Eligar, who is a friend of mine, and he has a somewhat, untraditional millennial American upbringing, and he had a lot of cool things to say. So yeah, take a listen.
Make sure you're like somewhat close to it.
Can you hear me?
You're gonna have to like get like pretty close to it.
Pretty intimate?
Yeah, just hold on to this because like it kinda...
Okay.
Yeah.
How about now?
Yeah, I think that's probably good.
You hear my velvety voice?
Yes. Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. All right, what is that noise? All right. What did you do this morning?
I had my steel-cut oats with my lovely mother. She had some, too, so I'm happy that she...
Steel-cut oats? Quakers?
Quakers. Wouldn't go any other brand.
That's the ritual for the morning, every morning.
Put a banana in there.
Yeah.
A little salt. I don't know why, but it tells you to put a pinch of salt.
Salt?
Yeah, I don't know.
In the oatmeal.
That's what it says. I'm just following the rules.
You're just following what the oatmeal guide tells you.
Whatever the Quaker dude says. He seems like he knows what he's doing.
Does that guy have a name with the hat?
He's been around for a while. You know?
Yeah.
You don't just get
that. He hasn't
that.
Aged at all, either.
No, he's got a... Gotta know what he's using.
Yeah.
Olay, maybe?
What's in the water?
Anti-wrinkle cream?
All
right, I'm done.
Okay. thanks for being my first dude on this. We've talked in real life without microphones several times, but now for some reason it's different because it's being recorded, I guess.
I feel like I'm being watched.
Yeah.
My voice is being watched.
It's called being listened to.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
I should have used that word instead.
But thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No, I'm... This is
and
awesome.
That's all the, it's all the love you're getting from me.
Well, I'm honored to be the first.
Yeah. I'm here sitting with, my friend Mustafa El Hagar. Yeah, I got my iPad on me with my talking point.
So studious.
Yeah, right?
So tech savvy of you using an iPad, even though you could have just used a notebook.
Yeah, I wrote it down, but I couldn't read my own handwriting. I was afraid.
Right.
That I wouldn't be able to understand.
Times New Roman is more legible.
Yes. Is it Times New Roman? I think Apple, the default font is Cambria.
Oh, yeah.
Or Calibri, one of those C.
Times New Roman is too...
It's too old. It's so Windows,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, it's so Microsoft. They basically invented it.
So I'm sitting with my friend Mustafa Elgar, who I've known for a while. Are you all right with that?
I don't know. I'm fine.
Just don't touch it. You're fine.
I'm gonna break this.
We're still novices with the technology, so the microphone stand isn't that.
Yeah, it's all right. You know, it's a trial and error.
Yeah, we don't know. I have no idea what we're doing.
I don't know.
Anyway, I've known Stav for a while. Grew up in the same town, went to the same college, but I guess we'll get into all that. But I wanted to talk to you first because. Your childhood and upbringing is pretty atypical compared to a lot of the kids our age, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say those things.
You would say those things?
Yeah.
Atypical is a word you'd use?
Yeah, I would.
Looking around my room at all my not trophies.
Yeah, like there's a lot of emptiness on these walls. Okay. I mean, it's filled with movie posters.
Yeah.
Got a nice Rat Pack.
Rat Pack, yeah.
Little Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis.
Give
Jr.
it up to Joey Bishop, the unknown Rat Pack guy. His name's up there.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known that if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I would say the crux of your atypicality, is that a word?
Yeah, sure, it is now.
Is where you're born and all that stuff. You want to get into that?
Yeah.
You're an immigrant.
I am an immigrant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't feel like one.
I mean,
I can't run for president.
That's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
So you were born in Egypt.
I was born in Egypt. Yeah. I was born in Egypt. All my family is in Egypt. I was supposed to live in Egypt until this very moment right now. But my dad got a job at a company called Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this huge company. I'm not really sure what they do.
Golden State Warriors Stadium is
Oracle Stadium. Oracle Arena. Yeah.
Oracle Arena.
That's my dad. He built that.
His own hands.
Yeah, he has nothing to do with that. But he got a job at this, you know, international corporation. So he applied for jobs all around the world because he knew,
right.
We have pyramids and stuff, but it's a pretty shitty country. So my dad wanted to get out of it, and he moved us, my parents. And my brother, and I'm here. I came here when I was 3 years old.
You came here when you were three?
When I was 3 years old. I haven't looked back since.
That's crazy.
I have.
So what did you, what did your mom and dad do when they were in Egypt, like professionally?
You know,
Do you even know?
I mean, like, I know my dad was a computer engineer. He was actually a professor, too.
Yeah.
He taught math. Yeah, I didn't really know that until recently, which is cool, because he must have been, like, 30 years old. My mom, I think she was just staying home at that time, just taking care of me and my older brother.
Right.
Who was 8 at the time.
Right. Yeah. How did your folks come to be married?
Mm.
Is that more complicated of a question?
I know, like, I'll give you the long story short. I know my dad, so he was a professor at the university, and my mom was a student there.
Right.
And he wasn't my mom's professor, but, like, in passing, I guess.
They just came to see each other.
Yeah, they saw each other's faces, and then every interaction after that was not between them, and then they got married. And I say that like that because it's basically how it works in Egypt.
Right. Well, maybe we'll get into more of that later.
Yeah.
So you moved here when you were 3. So the first 3 years of your life were in Egypt, which, like, if you ask any person if they can recall anything from their first 3 years of their life, it's really hard. But do you have any, like, specific clear memory of, like, what it was like over there, or is it all, like, blurry?
I mean, honestly, it's mostly blurry, but
yeah.
I do have your cliche, like, oh, this is the one thing I remember.
Yeah.
So, really, the only thing I remember is my great-grandfather. I just remember him, like, walking me around and stuff, and it's probably ironic that his name was Mustafa.
That's
who I was named after. And I don't know why. I remember, maybe when my 3-year-old self was like, this dude's also named Mustafa. I should remember him.
Yeah.
But I probably didn't have that thought process.
That was your grandpa?
My mom's grandfather. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Your great grandpa.
So that's my great grandpa. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
And then he died. Now he's dead.
While you were there?
No. No. But he just died.
Had you ever came back and saw him?
No, he was dead. He was
by the time
he
went
good
back.
And dead by he was dead. Yeah, he was definitely.
He was in the ground.
He probably died when I was like 5.
Right.
You know, he was pretty old. So.
So there wasn't any more of a significant reason of your parents' immigration into America other than like the whole classic, like looking for better opportunity thing.
I mean, like. This is an example, for instance. There's a whole ton of shit going on with Syria right now. Like, all those refugees you see in the news and, like, kids dying trying to get to Europe. Like, Syria's crumbling, and, like, that could very well be Egypt soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you say it's cliche, but, like, it's cliche because it's a big deal.
Yeah,
like,
it's cliche for a reason.
That shit sucks, living over there. Like, I mean, I'm not like, ha-ha, like, I'm not, like,
rubbing
in anyone's face, but, like, it's much better to live...
Yeah.
And the land of the free.
So, speaking of the land of the free, where was the first place that you geographically resided in America?
Yeah, we moved to California.
First.
So, we started off really good, and then it just, like, you know, fiscal cliff drop to New Jersey.
What eventually got you to New what brought you there?
I think my dad's work. I think they moved him to Cali first, and then we lived there for like a month. And I remember that because it was California.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
What did you remember about that? Just
pools,
it was cool and
palm trees.
And hot. Well, not cool
yeah,
and hot.
Hot girls.
Oh, you knew that?
No, but now that I look back, I'm sure I saw some.
Yeah. Oh, God. Keeps you up at night.
Yeah. I definitely should have
taken
advantage.
Maybe we'll make it out there someday.
Yeah, maybe.
So, I mean, with your parents coming over here, it was the first time that they ever came to America to, like, stay permanently, right?
Yeah, it was the first time they came to America, period.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, like, what, I don't know if you could, like, recall this, but, like, what were any ways in which your parents tried to, like, hold on to parts of your, like, Arabic, Egyptian culture and, like, integrate it into your lives here, like, at an early stage? Like, was there anything that you remember early, like, that they didn't want to hold on to or that they did want to hold on to and then, like, over time they stopped doing more of?
I think in terms of religion, that was pretty important. I mean, like, we still, you know, the whole 9 yards, like, praying and fasting, celebrating Ramadan and, like, reading Quran, which is, like, our Bible and stuff. But I would say it was kind of the opposite. I mean, they wanted my brother and I, and themselves, like, just as much to acclimate themselves to the American culture. Like, my... In Egypt, before we moved, my dad sent my brother to, like, a British private school in Egypt so that he could learn English with the intention of moving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How old was he during that time?
How old?
Yeah.
This is probably, like, kindergarten to second, third grade.
And he is how many years older than you?
He's 5 years older.
5 years older.
So he was like pretty much all of his
when
primary school up until, yeah. So I was too young.
Yeah.
When I came here, I mean, Arabic was my first language technically, but I absorbed English really, really easily once I started attending school.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, like, you know how little kids, they just like learn things really quick. I watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
That was huge. They say TV doesn't teach you anything, but, you know.
It's not true at all.
I wouldn't have this eclectic vocabulary without it. So.
Yeah, because, like, speaking about religion, I was raised Catholic, and right. I went through the whole, like, communion and CCD thing. Well, CCD is, I think it stands for Confraternity of the Christian Doctrine, which is just, like, Catholic schooling to eventually be confirmed. And, yeah, I went through that whole process, like, basically against my will.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for any more of a complicated reason of me not wanting to partake in it, other than seeing it as an inconvenience to other things that I wanted to be doing. Right. Like, it was just more schooling.
Right.
It's
your Sunday, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, no, they actually sometimes had them at, like, weeknights where you would go and, like, meet with yeah. So, like, was there ever a time in your childhood where you started not to necessarily question your religious affiliation, but just, you know, you consciously wonder what the reason for being a part of it was, or was it such a part of your... Oh, it's okay. Yeah, that doesn't stand. You just got to make sure the...
Got it.
Hold on to it.
Sorry, folks.
No, it's okay. Yeah, but, like,
yeah.
Did you ever consciously wonder what the reason for being a part of it was, or was it so part of your upbringing from the start that you didn't even think about it, and it just seemed like, oh, this is what we do? Like,
well, no, I mean, like, so you looked at CCD as an inconvenience in your schedule because you wanted to do other things that didn't involve school. And that was the thing for me, too. I mean, like, my parents sent me to Sunday, like, school, I guess, every now and then to, like, learn more about my religion. And they try to, like, involve us with, like, the community, every community and stuff. But for the most part, it wasn't an unconscious, like, oh, I'm just going to follow this religion blindly. I mean, like, think about it. I was raised in a upper middle class white town.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the only, like, true Arab Muslim. So I would go home. I mean, I would be home, and I'd be, like, 100%, 180 degrees different. And then I'd go to school, and then, like, everything that was so natural in my house, my home, would stick out like a sore thumb at right. school. So, more time I spent at school, the more time I started realizing how against the grain my lifestyle was.
So you didn't have, like, a specific realization that your family's religious practices were mostly different from the rest of the people in the community that you were surrounded in? Or was it just, like, over time you realized, like, oh, I'm the only one kind of...
So, yeah, it was, like, a slow progression, but
yeah.
There were peak points during... like events like holidays,
right?
Where like it'd be even Halloween, for instance. Like we didn't celebrate Halloween. That's a thing. Like that's not even religious, but it's a cultural holiday. Eventually, mm-hmm. my parents like let me celebrate it, but they didn't even know what it was in the beginning. So like on Christmas, when that came around, we started making, you know, like Christmas trees and decorating Santa and like getting presents and stuff
at school.
At school,
not
at
you
school. At school
at, with your family.
Yeah, and you know. We'd come back from New Year's and then like teacher would ask all of us what we got for Christmas, and then not like depressed like, oh, I didn't get anything. It was just like, oh wait, like I didn't know you're supposed to do something over winter break. Like
yeah.
What are you talking about? So it was those moments where it stuck out a little more that I was different, mainly because I wasn't getting presents and that was pissing me off.
Yeah, you wanted the goods.
Yeah, I wanted Legos. I never had Legos.
Remember the time in 7th grade? Or when was it? No, not definitely not 7th
nah,
grade.
Like
junior of high school.
Yeah, it was a pretty dick move of you.
I sent you a video from my new funny. iMac.
Yeah, he is.
Saying how I got one and you didn't.
Yeah, you were rubbing it in my face that you had a present and you were using the present to communicate that to me.
Oh God.
Yeah, it's like a double.
I was an asshole back then, huh?
Yeah,
I still am maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
it's funny though.
But I guess, I mean, your difference of religion wasn't really like looked upon as like a negative thing, really, probably until. Like 9/11, I would say, in your specific religion. And we were so young when that happened. Like, we were in third grade when that happened. Like,
yeah.
do you remember, like, realizing, like, the connection of, like, oh, wow, the people who are being publicly said to be the ones behind this associate themselves with the same religious practices that I do? Like, was there any, like, moment where you're like, oh, my God?
Well, I mean...
And did you, like... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, initially, like, before like, 9/11, like, I knew that I was different, and that in itself was tough as a kid. Just, you know, in general, like, I'm a kid, I'm immature, I don't know, like, I don't know any advantages of being different. I just, you know, want to be like everyone else because I don't want to stick out and be made fun of because, you know, how cruel kids are.
Yeah.
And then...
They'll just find the one thing that's unique about you and just...
Yeah, I mean, starting with my first name. But... and then when 9/11 happened, that's when it wasn't no longer because it was different that it was weird. It was because it was specifically, you mm-hmm. know, my religion, like being Muslim and being like a Middle Easterner. And like my parents would make it very visibly different. Not that it really mattered that like those people weren't Egyptian, even though like, I don't know, like there might have been some Egyptians involved, but like Osama, for instance, was Saudi Arabian and he lived in Afghanistan, nothing to do with Egypt. But so like that was trying to an attempt to try to comfort me, saying like, oh, they might be Muslim, but they're not Egyptian. Like, but that didn't matter because no kid at school, even teachers or even people in general, like care the difference. They just care the fact that yeah, it started making me almost. I mean, I don't want to like complain or like you know make like self pity or anything, but it made me almost ashamed of being like that specifically different. Mm-hmm. Cause I didn't understand. And, you know, I was actually talking to my mom this morning. It's kind of ironic. You know, I asked her, why we never put an American flag outside our house during like, you know, like that year and mm-hmm. the year after. And when it was still pretty like
the height
raw,
of
raw. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, I mean, there wasn't ever a point that we weren't in support of America. Of course we were. But we didn't want people to think that we were trying to overcompensate.
Right.
You know, by putting an American flag outside our house and making it look like we're scared or like we're trying too hard almost.
Yes.
So,
I'm trying to think of like a...
Yeah.
Something to, like, an analogy to that.
But. Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know. Like, it's like, yeah, literally, like, it sucked because they knew that they have nothing to do with that, obviously, but people can't help but make the connection. And you know what? It was funny, like, this is another example. My mom, for instance, was telling me this morning she was with her friend. And they went to Jersey City.
This is recently?
Recently. This is, I don't know, like maybe a week or two ago. And they're like on the Hudson. And there was part of the World Trade Center monument. It was like one of the beams that was in the World Trade Center. And it was like, you know, this thing in Jersey City that people take pictures in front of. And so my mom went to take a picture in front of it. And her friend was like, no, don't do that. And she's like, what do you mean? I don't understand. And she's like, well, like, just don't, like... People are still sore about it. Like, it's not going to resonate well if you try to, if you with, because she wears the hijab, which is like the scarf on her head.
Right.
So it's very visible. Noticeable that she's Muslim. So, like, it still affects her and us today, you know, like, she won't take a picture in front of the World Trade Center monument with her scarf on because, I mean, it's nothing like, our lives are so hard, you know, it's just, you know, things that you just kind of forget about, and then moments like that happen, you're like, oh, shit, you know, like, that's shitty.
Yeah, it still is, like, potent, or still, like, affects things, like, the daily... Yeah.
Here and there, but, I mean...
Do you remember, like, having, like, a family conversation, like, right after, like, about it, or, like, do you remember, like, addressing it as a family?
I really don't. I mean, like, it was kind of, like, I think everyone was confused, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone was like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
It was weird. I mean, it was definitely weird. It like took a turn for the worse, definitely with like being, especially on my parents, because like I was a kid, so as much, I guess, discrimination I was exposed to, like I didn't really like whatever. I was a kid. Like,
how are you exposed to? Because like, it's crazy. Because as a third grader, as of I guess an 8-year-old, like I did not think of it as, like, I didn't think of it deeply enough to, like, connect it to religion. Like, all I remembered was just being scared and, like, being able to go home to go home from school and, like, talking to neighbors and friends, like, other kids who are neighbors, like, about, like, oh, it happened on 911, like, that's crazy, like, that's so scary, like, looking up in the sky, seeing no planes, and, like, knowing that planes aren't allowed. Like, I don't ever remember thinking about it at a deep, like, connecting it to the Islamic faith and, like, seeing other people who are Muslim and being like, oh my God, those are them. But, like, you still, like, as a kid, experience that from other kids?
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, like, think about it. Like, you went home and then you watched the news that day.
Right.
And you see all these people's names are, like, the suspected terrorists. And they're all foreign to you. Mm-hmm. No, it's like if I saw, like, Russian names, like, you wouldn't even think much of it. You wouldn't even make the connection because there's no connection. They're foreign to you. But when I go home and I see those faces and I read those names, those are like standing out to me, because like those are names that are like natural to like my native tongue. Like Osama is a pretty common name, you know. So it's like seeing like it's like being in like Africa, living in Africa, and then like some white guy like I don't know, committing some terrorist act, and then on the news it's like,
see Joe,
like Joe Johnson. And, like, no one really, like, makes a connection in Africa, but you're like, oh, that dude, like, I don't know him, obviously, but, like, that name, shit, like, that is a connection to me. So I think what it did for everyone, including you, like, when you're talking to your neighbors and stuff, it brought everyone closer, because, mm-hmm. you know, that's what those kinds of events do. But for me, it did the opposite. It really, like, created a further barrier between... And it didn't affect me, like, that much.
Did you ever start to, like, resent it because of its...
I resented... Oh, my God. I resented it so... I resented that day so much. I probably hated
it. And your connection to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's where it originated by me being resentful towards 9/11. I probably hated 9/11 and that fact that happened a little more than most people because... I mean, I felt the effect as an American. I mean, even though I wasn't even a citizen then... But I also had this next level hate towards it because not only was it a terrible, atrocious, you know, act to happen on that day, but it changed me, my family, and my life after, forever.
Yeah.
And so Osama didn't only affect the Americans that lived here, and obviously that effect was huge and, like, tragic. But he also affected all of the Muslims who are truly, like, you know, just bystanders. They have no fucking idea what went on, like, just like any of you. And I'm not blaming anyone or anything. I'm not trying to, like, sound politically correct, too. I'm just, this is an observation that I made.
When was there a time, what are you looking at?
Nothing, it was just
a sign. When was there a time where you started to, like, appreciate and, like, your uniqueness?
Well...
Yeah,
I mean, what happened was, like, I think for me, I started to do what any kid would do to try to, fix, or not fix, but, like, mitigate this, like, stress that I would have, like, pretty often of being different. So what I would do is do the opposite. I would try to almost remove myself from my culture and my religion slowly and slowly, progressively. In a, I guess, like, subconscious attempt to, you know, make this, like, reach to be like, hey, I'm not different. Like, I'm not who you think I am to the rest of, you know, the world or, like, my classmates. And I didn't even like to introduce my first name. Like, when I would meet someone, like, one, it's just a long and awkward name, Mustafa. I mean, like, it doesn't always start a conversation. Roll off the tongue. Well, yeah, so hold on. And then on two, like, some people, thankfully my name isn't, like, fucking Muhammad. That would have created, like, a little more of a tougher upbringing. But the name is, you know, Islamically, you know, founded. It's Mustafa's very Muslim name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I resented it. I wanted to get away from it. I even, like, remember talking to my parents about changing my name when I was older.
Wow.
My brother did, too, and he was, like, 100%, like, certain about it. And then, like, I started to appreciate, actually. It started, like, opening my eyes. It's kind of funny, like, you know, in college you find yourself. Like, I guess at this point, I remember, like, first week of freshman year at college, I would say, like, you know, everyone's, like, just, like, young and horny and, like, raw and, like, insecure about themselves raw. And just trying to find a group of friends and literally like just doing like
doing whatever they can to make themselves stand out.
Yeah, so all I'd have to do is just introduce myself, like, hey, my name's Mustafa. Like,
I can attest to that.
Yeah, and what I actually started getting like a ton of, I mean, this is like just what happened. I got like a ton of Facebook friend requests, like a lot, like weekly, like the first couple weeks of school.
And we talked about that while it was happening, and we definitely attributed that to your name.
To my name.
But also because of your aesthetics.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that'd be cool. Yeah.
But it was definitely the combination of the two, or maybe more Mustafa. Yeah,
which is fine. I mean, that's when I started realizing, like, oh shit, like this like weapon that I've been using against myself, I could actually use it like as an asset, you know, like, and that's when it like hit me. Like, I was like freshman class president, and you were the vice president, and I got the intention to run initially because I was like, the momentum was already getting there. Like, I was already getting Facebook requests because of my name. And so I kind of knew that if I just got myself out there and just literally all I had to do was say my name. Hi, my name's Mustafa.
Say my name.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. while you're literally wearing a Heisenberg Breaking Bad shirt.
Yeah, yes. With a Breaking Bad poster behind you, staring at you, saying, "I'm the one who knocks."
Yeah, I could see in the mirror now. It's pretty creepy. But yeah, so that's when I started first initially appreciating the difference, because everyone's the same, and you really gotta, they tell you, you gotta differentiate yourself with anything to make an impact. Like, to get a job, you gotta have a differential thing on your resume
that
makes you stand out. Well, mine was the innate name that I have, Mustafa. Conversation started. And then that's when I started appreciating, like, you know, my culture and thinking about, you know, maybe it's not a terrible thing that I'm different than everyone else, because now I get to appreciate two spectrums of the world that are completely different from one another.
Right, but earlier on, like, when you said you started to disaffiliate yourself from the your previous culture, and you started to become more accustomed to and immersed in the American culture from like being surrounded by other like students and stuff like that, who are much more like innately a part of that culture than you were.
They were innately a part of that culture. They were,
and by being exposed to like American pop culture too.
Yes, you definitely.
Did you ever like start to realize a feeling of disconnect between like the way you were externally viewed because of the way you looked and because of your name, and the way you internally identified yourself, and like, how did that manifest?
Well, it was hard. I mean, I didn't even really have a visible internal perception of myself.
Right.
I was still trying to find.
Who does?
Yeah. Right.
At that age.
Well, yeah, and I'd like to think that I have a pretty good idea of who I am now, but back then, I wasn't really. I don't think I was really thinking about it deeply. I think I was just trying to do whatever I could to just fit in. And that's what every kid does, regardless of like what difference they have. Like, even if, like, you know, like, kids who are fat when they're kids, when they're young, like, they feel almost discriminated against. Yeah, and they want to just do whatever it takes to fit in. I was the fat kid, but instead of being fat, I was just Muslim. I had brown skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to really irk me. I was pretty insecure about it, I guess. Like, if someone called me, like, Indian per se, I get like upset because I'm like, no, I'm not like different, like, stop saying that I'm different.
So you started trying to integrate yourself as much as you can. Like, what were some of the way, like, American pop culture, like, what were some of the things that you tried to be, what were some of the ways in which you tried to exercise being the same as everyone else?
Well, one I didn't appreciate anything in terms of Arabic or like Middle Eastern culture. I didn't care much at all about like Middle Eastern music or pop culture. My parents did. All they did was watch Arabic TV.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to separate myself as far as I could from that. And then I would like wear, I mean, in high school, I did what everyone else did. I wore your standard Express graphic tees, and I had my earrings pierced. And if you're not from Jersey and you're listening to this, then you probably think that I was, I'm not going to.
Eccentric.
Yeah. Metrosexual. Yeah, and I probably was.
Yeah, so was I.
But, like, so was everyone else. So I just try. I don't care, dude. If
and there's everyone, still people our age who still wear those.
Yeah, like, so
from
so
who
guys,
never got out
guys,
of jersey.
Yeah, for you guys still dressing like that.
To all then, the Chris Wears.
Jump off a cliff. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah, no, that's cool. I'm actually
get a pair
kind
of bow shoes.
I'm pretty intimidated by those people.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
But yeah, so you like started to try to do things that were similar to everyone else, like even earlier on, like
yeah, just didn't. I mean,
didn't
I
do
think
little
was,
league.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, there were some things that I didn't have my parents to guide me. I had to figure this all on my own. You know, like. I didn't do Little League, not because I'm like, no, like, that's not part of my culture. Eh. No, mm-hmm. Like, I just didn't know that was a thing. Like, no wonder, like, where the fuck was everyone? Well, like, I was home on, like, during Little League season, and I'd be like, where the hell is everybody, like, all the time? I was just, like, watching Thundercats.
There's this thing called baseball that's yeah. pretty popular.
Yeah, right? That'd be nice if, like, someone handed me, like, a handbook, like, when I was a kid, like, here. So, like, it wasn't just Little League. It was, like, you know, like, a lot of things, like, different kinds of sports, prom, my mom, like, and the good thing is I had my brother to kind of like buffer and kind of like prepare my parents for like the stuff that they had
what
no
it's
idea.
Like growing up as
yeah
a...
not that that like fully made it like okay when I started like for prom, for instance. My mom had absolutely no clue what the hell prom was when my brother mm-hmm. when it was time for my brother, and he was like, I need a date, and she was like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you're not gonna date someone. He's like, no, mom, it's just a date, like, for a night. And she still didn't really understand.
She was against him dating.
Oh, I mean, she was against both of us dating. I wasn't allowed to have anything yet.
And that's part of the religion.
That's part of the 100%. And that sucked. I mean, what kind of, like, you know, young.
So there is definitely a disconnect between not only the way you saw yourself and others saw yourselves, but like the way, I mean, I feel like all kids growing up in middle school and high school aren't the same person that they are with their parents, that they are with their
yeah,
friends.
Right. Well, yeah.
But I can imagine for you, it was like a lot more extreme.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was. So like I would go to school and I would try extra hard to be like everyone else at school. And then I would go home and then I would try extra hard to stay the kind of person I was at school, but also like become this person that my mom thought she saw of who I was, which was like, you know, just like you're this boy that
typical
she
Muslim
yeah,
boy.
I mean, it was hard for my parents too. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, they moved us here to have a better life, but an unintended consequence for them was to have to raise kids in a completely opposite culture. And not only is that tough for them because they don't understand what we were going through, but they can't even help. And it would be much easier for me to get away with things too, because my parents, like, there's times when your parents, like, you thought you got away with something, but
they
your
knew.
Parents really knew and they just let it go. Why? Not because they're geniuses, but because they were
around the block
kid.
Of that.
Yeah, they
same
were a
thing.
Kid when they were, yeah, chip off the old block. Like, that's what you are. But my parents, like, it's a different path. So I probably got away with a lot of stuff, mainly because it's not like my parents ever went through something like that. So they couldn't, like, put themselves in my shoes in a lot of situations. So, and it created a disconnect between my parents and me a little bit, because I wanted so bad to be this American. And they did a great job acclimating themselves, but their whole lives in America, they were foreigners who live in America. And I wanted to be an American.
Who used to be a foreigner.
Who used to be a foreigner.
Or
yeah.
used to be.
Or is a foreigner, but like is an American, really. And like, you really have to get to know me to find out that I'm foreign.
Mm-hmm.
And with my parents, it's like you really have to get to know them to find out that they're American.
Yep.
So
I think that's pretty much been accomplished for you.
Yeah, and I'd like to say so. And now that I think I have... I've filled a lot of the insecurity gaps that I think that I have had, and now I'm trying to appreciate, you know, my like roots, I guess, going
right.
through that phase. But you know, it's not easy.
Speaking of roots, I don't want to delve into this because I don't want this to be a politically minded or watch out for that. A politically putting your legs up on the table. A politically minded. Or focus show, mostly because I don't have the adequate erudition or knowledge for that to be the case, but like what's ISIS's deal? Like, I mean,
wow.
And I know this has been like a long ongoing thing, like, so that's more complicated than just saying what's ISIS's deal,
but honestly, but what like, is
what,
their deal?
Yeah. What is now or has been, while this has all been going on, at the forefront of your thoughts when thinking about them and their connection to Islam and like, and Islam's progression? And hasn't Egypt's president been like somewhat of a progressive voice?
Yeah, I mean, he's outwardly spoken.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
All right, so I'm going to try to make this as fundamental, simply explained, without too much detail, but the general crux of all this and how I feel about it as an American Muslim with adequate, I think, I mean, probably not adequate, but a good enough perspective on both sides to see it through. So ISIS is essentially rooted by a very traditional ideology. Ideology meaning the way of practice of Islam. And that is, so it's two things. It's one, all the cultural laws that were created back when Islam was first founded, which was about 1500 years ago, which was a barbaric times, not just in the Arabic region of the world, but in Europe, in the time of the Crusades. I mean, it was just a barbaric time. Those laws, there was cultural laws that were founded then during the Islamic times. And the people today, they are so passionate about their historic roots that not only do they transfer the religion from it where it was conceived, which is the Quran and, you know, the teachings of the Prophet, they transfer those things to now and they practice those things, which is what every religious person does. They practice their Bible. The Christian practice the Bible that was created, you know, 2,000 years ago or whenever it was really created. anyway, so they're practicing the Quran that was founded 1,500 years ago. But then they're also practicing all these laws, these societal laws that were created back then that were applicable back then that are not applicable now. Because now we are a much more civil society. We have rules. We have a police system. We have a court system. We don't need to cut someone's hands off if they get caught stealing. But these fundamentalists, they don't really care. They're not willing to progress and adapt to today's society. And why? It's because they have confused themselves between what is supposed to be adaptable and what isn't. And what isn't supposed to be adaptable is the Quran. And when I say that, I mean the Quran hasn't changed a word since it was written, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Muslims are pretty proud of that, and they don't want, of course, they do not want the Quran to be changed in any way, and it shouldn't be. But then all these cultural, societal laws that were conceived during the same time, they have confused the integrity of the Quran with the integrity of these laws, and now it's as jeopardizing and adapting those laws,
getting conflated and mixed together.
So it's essentially like if they were to change those laws, it's like it'd be changing the Quran, and that's
right.
And like you would get your head cut off. Wow. But these are man-made laws,
mm-hmm,
that were applicable then that are not applicable now. So I think that, and then like through time, I mean, here's the thing. This is something that my dad kind of explained to me, which was really cool. Is so. People are, a lot of people, you know, everyone knows that power corrupts, right?
Power corrupts.
So anyone who gains power essentially wants more power and greed, and it kind of consumes your psyche and makes you a person that you never. Breaking Bad is a perfect example.
Yes.
So think about the fact that there's this Bible, the Quran, that cannot be changed. The words can't be changed. The rules can't be changed. And to be honest, they're pretty ambiguous, like the Bible, to give society the ability to take the principles and apply them to rules that are applicable in society today. Anyway, so does that make sense?
Yes.
So these people in power, they want to do things that kind of go against the Quran, like leaders in the Middle East. This isn't now. This is like hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Oh, okay.
So, like, maybe 200 years after the conception of all of the Quran, Muhammad, the Prophet, and all that, There's things called, this is like kind of my opinion. There's passages, teachings of the prophet that were recorded 200 years after his life that people live by and they practice as stringently as the Quran, as it's almost as if it's Quran, right?
Right.
So they practice these teachings of the prophet, but these teachings of the prophet were written down 200 years after he was alive. So it's all hearsay. The way they were able to establish these teachings was to ask people that heard from other people that knew Muhammad 200 years ago. So think about it. I can't even tell. If I asked you, like, what did you have for breakfast yesterday, you wouldn't even be able to tell me.
Well, I would, but that's only because I ate the same thing.
Well, it's because you're, anal.
I'm a healthy loser.
I know, yeah, I agree.
Anyway, continue.
So what my dad kind of explained to me, which is just kind of in his opinion thing, and I agree with it, was, I mean, I think the intention of gathering these teachings of the prophet were pure, but over time, those things could be changed because they weren't the Quran. They were allowed to be changed, kind of, because they're words that were written down by a person, not God.
Right.
So if something was kind of if someone in power wanted to do something that kind of went against the Quran, they can almost make this writing, this hadith, this passage in the prophet's book that would allow them to do this thing that kind of goes against
like
the Quran.
Asterisk.
It's kind of like an asterisk. It's kind of like an amendment that is there as a loophole. Mm-hmm. They create these loopholes. And so, like, so long story short, like, it just think about all this stuff that I just said. Even if you don't understand anything I just said, essentially all of it is corruption. Power corrupted, and now people are confused between what's the Quran and what's things that can be changed. Even though they know the distinction between the two, they just have put everything together as, we can't change any of this stuff because it's sacred. And so now, I mean, now, like, there's this rotted ideology of Islam being, like, not only the best religion, but everyone has to follow it. And
within
if you
it.
Don't, then you're an infidel. And
with the extremists.
With the extremists. No modern. I mean, it's very explicitly said in the Quran, like, very explicitly. And anyone can go back and read this. It says, like the, I don't know word for word, essentially, though, it's like, I'll practice my faith and you practice yours.
That's in the Quran.
Yes.
And somehow that seems to be.
Well, that's the thing. If someone's in denial and you're trying to tell them, dude, you're wrong, they're not going to listen to you. You can show them
some experiences with that.
Yeah. So, this goes for anything. I mean, like, this happens in today's world in America, like, with, you know, political figures who are so, almost like delusional about, I think at least, about, like, you know, it's going to sound super liberal, but I'm not like a socialist, but, like, you know, corporations and how much they control campaigns, and they're so delusional about the fact that, like, they have such power over politicians because, like, and they don't do anything about it because, like, it's an advantage to the politicians for corporations to pay for their campaigns. So, like, why say that it's a wrong thing if you're
right.
You know, like, you're not going to even think twice about it. So, I don't know. That's just, I'm saying that.
Well, it's
I think
deep-rooted, it's then. It's, and that's what the, I guess, what the crux
so,
of it is.
So, yeah, and so now ISIS is, like, they're convinced that Islam needs to conquer the world. So, therefore, like, they're doing Allah a favor by killing innocent civilians if they differ in thought. Even if you're Muslim and you go against ISIS, you're still going to get killed. And apparently a lot of these people aren't Muslim. Like, a lot of these people aren't Arab. But they're joining the movement because, I mean, like, it's a corrupt society over there. And, like, one option is you're going to live your life. One option is you're going to live your life under the government that's not going to give you anything good. You're not going to get a good job. You're not going to be able to feed your family. You have no security. There's no police. And the other option is you join this like, gang. And it sucks to have to be a part of a gang, but on the flip side, they take care of everything for you. They protect you and your family, and they give you food and money. So it's like, what do you pick? It's a double-edged sword.
Well, do you see, like, if just to wrap this up, do you see any type of solution?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I think it's almost a good thing. Like, it's a silver lining that all this stuff is going on, because this ISIS thing wasn't, like, something that just came out of nowhere. No, it was a slow progression, and it's a volcano essentially that eventually erupted. And like a lot of people in the Middle East had the same thoughts as what these terrorists have now, but a much less extreme version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now all these people, these normal people, are realizing, holy shit, like the ideology of Islam is fucked up and we need to change. We can't be proud of our traditions anymore. We need to actually change them because they're no longer applicable.
Right.
And that's what the president of Egypt did. He went up and said to the Islamic scholars in the most renowned university of Islam.
Hey, what's going on here?
Not only did he say, hey, what's going on? He said, like, you are the reason why Islam, the ideology of it is falling apart, and God is watching your next move. So, like, it's on you, and you better be, like, you better be careful because God is watching you. It was, like, pretty, like, spine shat. I was like, it was sick.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I was like, oh, justice.
Well, that's... Whew.
Yeah, so that was... Sorry, that was
well, anyway,
elongated.
Let's...
I said long story
short. Like
15,
yeah, we have like 10, 15 minutes left, so let's focus on some more, I guess, less politically involved stuff for the last 10, 15
yeah.
minutes. But, so other than having to deal with all that throughout your first 22 years of your life, everything Arabic, negative, Muslim-related, they're like... I mean... I know now your parents are divorced, correct?
Yes,
and they
are.
Separated. And, you know, I completely understand if you don't want to talk about this too much. But I understand that, like, oftentimes you had to be the mediator between the two at a young age.
Yeah.
And how old were you when they, like, the separation started?
Sophomore year of high school.
The separation started?
Yeah, freshman, sophomore year.
Yeah. So. I'm interested to hear, like, what kind of effect... the being the mediator and seeing that at such a young age had on you, and that if you call what your thought process was at the time about being forced to be like the arbitrator between the two.
Yeah, I mean, so like my brother doesn't really like talk to my dad, so that left me because my parents kind of like hate each other. Well, I mean, honestly, like I'm not upset about their divorce. It was so inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
So they hate each other and they don't talk to each other, so... if one needs to get the message across to the other, I'm the only option. And so, like, was it something and I was like, oh, like, why do I have to do this? No, not really, because it was kind of like, I knew I just had to do it.
Right.
It wasn't a second, it wasn't like, oh, why can't they just do that? I just knew that was need to be done. And it was really stressful because, like, one thing, like, one parent would say would be kind of mean, and they would tell me to say it to the other parent, then I'd have to kind of filter it and try to like form it in a way that doesn't sound as offensive because I obviously don't want to get the reaction from the other.
Mm-hmm.
So it sucked. It was stressful. But at the end of the day, like, boy, did it teach me like some really great experience in terms of how to, you know, compromise and like
just
arbitrate
deal with
and deal with people. Yeah. And deal with situations that, you know, are stressful. But like, you know, you gotta like, it taught me a lot, and you know I wouldn't take that back. And now it's going to help me in like my job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I you know I also wonder, being so close to that, to that relationship, did that have an effect on your belief in the legitimacy of like lasting romantic relationships and love, and if that made you think then or still now if you were personally able to ever find that in another person, and if the system is like. It's not plausible. I mean, I don't know the way in which they... You talked earlier about the way in which they met, and you said we'd get back, but I didn't know what you really meant.
Well, yeah, I mean...
yourself, too. Like,
does seeing my parents get divorced lose hope for me to find, like, a wife and be happy? No, I don't think so, because I think I have a pretty unique case. I mean, not to say that... So essentially, yeah, the way my parents met, I don't think it was based. I don't think the system that they lived under was set for them to succeed in a marriage. I think it was set for them to fail, in my opinion.
In what way?
Because a lot of interactions with the other sex is very prohibited, especially during that time in Egypt. So
while you're dating.
Yeah, but the thing is that they weren't really dating. Like you're either engaged. And gonna get married, or don't know another girl.
Oh,
like,
wow.
So, like, obviously there's a phase of pre-engagement, but it's not really dating. It's trying to talk to her in public places that, like, really you're not going to find out who that person... You really get to find out who the person is when you, like, live with them.
Right. Right? And, which is kind of similar to now.
Which is, yeah, similar to now, but not then. And like, my parents' families would know things. They would find out, like, things about the other...
Through their friends.
Through their friends and through the family. So it was very, like, third party, like...
Wow.
And then, like... You know, like, you're just not going to get to know the person by asking their friends and family who they are. Like, are you kidding me? So when they got married, I mean, like, it was inevitable that the probability of them being compatible was very, very low because it was a gamble.
So you don't see, like, you're okay with your ability to possibly...
Well, I know, like, the thing is I prioritize differently when I'm looking for a wife or, I guess, a girlfriend or whatever. And that is, like, doesn't matter, like, because they prioritize, like, oh, is her family good? Like, does she come from a good family? Is she ambitious? Like, all, I don't know, like, these kind of things, I guess, matter, but don't really.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's, like, I know that I have to learn a lot about myself and my strengths and weaknesses. And then I prioritize the personality type of the other person, my future wife, and how that could be compatible with my strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I don't know how successful it's going to be, but it gives me hope because the perspective for me is different, and it's towards trying to find someone who will be compatible, like a best friend is.
Is that more crazy, though?
Why?
Like, trying to find that perfect thing, like, and, like, is that even a thing? Or is it maybe, like, I mean, well, it's a crapshoot anyway.
I mean, have you heard, like, shoot for the moon, yeah, or shoot for the stars, but if you miss, you land on the moon.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents weren't shooting for the stars.
That's true. I don't know, I've been reading a lot of the thing, like, Aziz Ansari, have I showed you that stuff?
No.
Like, he has, his new stand-up tour was called Modern Romance, and he wrote a book, I think, maybe called the same thing, and he wrote, like, Time articles about how, like, finding a partner has started to become more like what it was for his parents. In that, like, we can have a list of all the things that someone is and be able to identify them and be like, oh, I like this, oh, and not, yeah, that, because of technology and stuff like that. And, like, it's starting to come back around the way it used to be, where it's, like, not really getting to know someone.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, a really good point. I feel like, I mean, one thing that we need to prioritize is, like, who we are before we try to find someone else.
Right. Because I bet you a lot of those people are like, oh, I want this, this, and this because I'm not that. Which may not be that good.
Or, yeah, or, like, the society's expectation is you want a person who, you know, like, I don't know what the definition of society's, like, perfect, like, candidate, mm-hmm, for a husband or a wife is, but you are subconsciously trying to appease to whatever society's expectation of a good wife or husband is.
Right.
But it's not what necessarily will be compatible with you.
Right.
But it's hard to go against.
So you have to do both of those things.
You have to do both of those things, and I think a lot of people don't really understand who they are. And I'm one of those people. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm not, like, being self-righteous.
So, like, what are you internally in yourself, like, thinking about it now, like, what, and starting to know who yourself now, like, what is it just that you need, like, at a simple?
Well, like, what do I need in another person?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I like to think myself as someone who is pretty level-headed, like, doesn't get worked up about an argument, or, like, it's pretty, I guess, logical. And so this is the thing for me, like, I'm a logical person. I'm not really that emotional. And I don't know what would be more compatible with me, someone who's also logical,
mm-hmm,
and doesn't get emotional, or someone who is more emotional and can
balance. It's like the olive theory and How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, it's like the olive theory and How I Met Your Mother. I love olives, so I gotta find someone who hates them so I can eat their olives in their salad.
I don't like olives.
This is awkward.
All right, continue.
I don't know. So
yeah,
I mean, I think the thing that I'm gonna keep doing though is life experience.
Right.
Like Louis C.K. Like.
Dude,
nothing
could
be more, like more beneficial to your knowledge than life experience.
Right.
You know, a 6-year-old guy, like, if you're
45-year-old garbage man knows more than a 28-year-old,
yes,
with 3 PhDs.
Was that what it was? Yeah. Because that 28-year-old spent his entire life
focusing on three things.
What an idiot.
Yeah.
And even if that 45-year-old dude is wrong, his wrongness is more rooted in life experience than,
yes,
yours.
He's been through things.
He's
took a bus to Montreal.
he went to a fair. Got a hand job from a minor.
Saw a dead guy floating in a motel pool.
He doesn't mean a minor, by the way. Like a minor.
An old man who works in a mine.
Works in with dirty hands.
Oh God. Well, that leads me to my next question. Besides being, along with me, the ambassador of spreading the word of Louis C.K. at college, which probably, much to his chagrin, because of his...
I think we're prophets.
We're prophets. Because he doesn't want to be famous at all. Yeah. Besides doing all that, you were involved in several different things in college. You were the president of your class, freshman, sophomore, junior year, and senior year, you were president of the entire student body. Which came with being the student representative of the university's board of trustees, along with a bunch of other crap that you had to deal with. You were an orientation leader for 2 years. You were involved in Greek life with the fraternity Sigma Phi Epsilon and held an executive board position as chaplain, which is like kind of the judicial arm of the chapter. You were also an executive board member of the marketing association, right? And you did this while getting above a 3.8 GPA. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment. What were like the most significant takeaways from being involved in all those extracurriculars that you hope to utilize or already have utilized in your life in the future?
Well, like one lesson taught me like through and through more and more that is more, I think, of something that's a cliche, but like you got to listen to me when I say this, but through all those, it wasn't the organizations that taught me like so much.
Right.
It was those organizations were venues for me to surround myself by people, different people with different perspectives.
Right.
And I might have not learned a lot from most of those people, but there was at least one person in every organization that was monumental to my perspective on life. Mm-hmm. And I can give you specific examples for each. I mean the past student body president Ben Cloutier, he was just like, I don't know, I mean like I came into college and he was already the president and he had like all this stuff going for him, super smart guy, and I was like a naive freshman who had nothing and I was cockier than he was and I was like, what the hell's wrong with me? Like why do I think I'm hot shit and this guy is literally running the school?
Right.
So that kinda like, you know, humbled me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
For like SIGEP, I never really thank him enough, but Kevin Carroll, like this dude, he is honestly like one of the funniest. And you hear people say all the time, like, oh, my friend is so funny. Like, he's the funniest kid. This kid, no, he's like actually like creatively a genius.
Yes. Yeah.
And the one thing he really taught me that really helped my people skills really is don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
He was so easy to make fun of himself, and at that time when I first
met him, translated into an easiness with other people, like
100%,
like a natural.
Well, I mean, this kind of goes again to like my religious and like my cultural differences. Is like I used to get made fun of, and I'd be really defensive about it,
mm-hmm.
and that would just spark the fire to progress even more with them making fun of me, whatever. And then I started realizing like it wasn't even personal. It wasn't about me. It was just like, you know, people make fun of other people for anything.
Right.
And with Kev Carroll, like when someone made fun of him
about
something,
him being a stick,
he would totally
a virgin.
He would totally agree with him.
Oh, he fucked a go-gurt.
Yeah, yeah. Like literally lost his virginity to a go-gurt and he left it out in the sun to get warm fire. Yeah, but like
what he
taught me what that was really great was that
yeah.
If someone's, you know, Once someone starts becoming defensive when they're getting made fun of, it's kind of a sign that they're taking themselves too seriously.
Right.
And people hate that.
Right.
People do not like people who take themselves too seriously, whether it's about things that they hold true to them or if it's about the positions they hold in an organization or a business. And obviously, like, I'm not telling you to not stay true to your convictions because those are very important, but... Mm-hmm. So you always got to like humble yourself down and bring yourself back. And it always goes with this humble kind of perspective.
Right. And now because of all those things that you're a part of and because of your good GPA, you're able to secure a job.
Yeah.
Like a real person job.
A job.
Do you want to explain just a little bit of what that job is?
Yeah. So I'm super grateful. I got a job at Johnson & Johnson,
mm-hmm.
like maybe March before I graduated, to work for their one of their medical device subsidiaries, Ethicon. They make medical device equipment. So I'm doing sales for them. And it's been, I mean, I have like a salary,
401k.
Yeah, I've been doing it since the end of June, and it's been, I've already learned like unreal amount. And it's just like, yeah, it's kind of crazy because, you know, it's not like, it's not my job, it's my career, you know?
Yeah.
And
you've definitely been able to use some of the things that you learned from there and apply them, like how to deal with people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm learning sales. And if I could speak to any business major or whatever out there, I'm not saying like I'm a genius at all, but I did read a couple books, one being Mark Cuban's.
Got to get him in here.
Yeah, and I don't know if anyone knows Mark Cuban. I hope you do, because he's a genius. He's the owner of the Mavericks basketball team. He's on Shark Tank. Come on, like, you got to know this guy. He's a self-made billionaire.
Possibly Donald Trump's
running mate. Yeah, I'll be sick. I doubt it's going to happen. But he essentially said, like, for any business people out there, like, there isn't better experience than to do sales. If you can succeed in sales, you can succeed in anything in business.
Wow.
So I'm excited to get good at sales.
Get out there and start doing it.
Yeah. And it's pretty lucrative, so I'm not going to not.
Yeah.
Get a company car next year.
Oh, that's awesome. What kind of car?
It's probably going to be like a Malibu. But
Chevy Malibu?
Probably.
Great gas mileage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, their safety ratings. It's 5-star.
Test through the roof.
Yeah, and J&J only picks cars that I have like.
Get your own iPad safety. Too, right?
I mean, on iPad. I get a gas card.
That's fucking awesome.
I get a gas card so that not only do they pay for my gas that I use to get to work, but
yeah,
if I want to take a road trip, personal road trip, they'll pay for that gas.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So last thing, we got to wrap up soon.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Obviously, you know, the focus on the show is about millennials and people our age.
Is that what it is about?
And, you know, one negative thing that is talked about with the way we live our lives is because of technology and its vast output of information that we have the ability to obtain constantly. And we kind of create like an external dialogue that like distracts ourselves from our own inner thoughts and real lives and stuff like that. And I think
kind of like this.
Yes.
When people are listening to right now.
Exactly. Podcast is a thing for sure. And I think, you know, I think people our age aren't the only ones. Like, I think people like all ages are starting to do this now. Like, but we are just kind of the ones who started to do it, I guess. You know, and that could be something as simple as texting your friend to not feel alone or listening to a podcast, like some, like an hour long conversation. But like, you are someone who isn't always attached to their phone. There's like a joke amongst our friends about how you have 400 unread text messages on your phone all the time. And it's not that they're unread, it's just that they're unopened. So you like see them, but you don't like open them.
Yeah. I've tried to get better at that.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. But, yeah, you're someone who doesn't seem compelled to always have something to distract you and enjoys thinking and sitting with nothing and going into a deeper internal thinking. Do you try to like not be connected to that so much, or is it something you just don't innately try? Is it something you don't innately need?
I mean, honestly, I find it almost like an insecurity. Like, I wish I was, I guess, more like everyone else where I can constantly communicate with people on my phone, like via text, email. Like, I know it's kind of detrimental even to my work because I need to email people constantly. I don't even remember what like your question was.
Do you feel like, so you don't, it's not something that you try to not do. It's just something that you do.
If anything, it's something that I try to do more.
Right.
Like, which is a kind of like, it's natural to everybody, and I'm trying to, but the thing is, I want to make a point is like really quick that I think there's a lot of ambiguity with the result of all this technology and how it's going to affect us as a human race and society, because it's something that's never been done before.
Right.
And people are scared, and they should be. And especially older generations who have lived their lives differently are like almost judging the new era. And they're like, this is going to destroy
Louis
human
C.K.
interaction. Right. And like, why
that's
people,
being a person
people
just
always on their phones, like, why can't you just have a conversation, like put your phone down at dinner, don't text.
Right.
But you have to remember, like, I think it was Plato back, you know, whatever, 2,000 years or however long ago, said that's when literature started to become a thing, like writing things down.
And he talked down about writing.
He talked down about writing. And he said
that it was going to disconnect us.
Yeah, because people would stop asking other humans to answer questions. They would just read books. They would read it. They would read.
Right.
They wouldn't rely on human interaction anymore. And I don't know if you could ask anyone, do you think books have destroyed society? I don't think anyone would agree that it has.
Yeah, but technology might be a little more
complicated than that. Yeah, but the point is, but if you compare literature, if you compare like letters, language that's written down at a time where that didn't exist prior, that's a monumental stage that you're entering, a new era of things being written down. So, like, we might not see the difference between, like, written language and verbal language that much because it's been something that's been a part of us since, you know, like, a long time ago. So the technological advancement and that being different than what we did 50 years ago might seem like a huge cliff, but it also might just be perceptually that because it's something that we haven't – that we're experiencing the differences. We never experienced the difference between only having verbal language and having both verbal and written. But we are experiencing a difference between having technology.
I just wonder if the constant, easily obtainable, ability to get that type of is so much more present than books and stuff like that. Like, I wonder if it's too much. If there's too much voices and there's too much things that we're not retaining any of the positive aspects from it, and it's all getting muddled together.
Yeah.
Because I feel definitely sometimes I listen to a bunch of podcasts or watch a bunch of different things, and it's kind of just me wanting to get all that information and be able to say that I want to watch these things, but I feel I'm doing so much of it sometimes that it's all getting meshed together, and I'm not really getting anything out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, I think that, as humans, we go through learning curves. Whenever we start learning something, it's hard for us in the beginning, and, we're kind of jumbling around. When you first learn how to ride a bike, you fell a couple times, and now you don't even think twice.
No, I was a flawless bike rider.
Right, clearly. I would have guessed that by your athletic profile. So I don't think humans aren't the only thing that go through learning curves. I think societies do too.
Right.
And I think we're going through, as a society, the learning curve of technology being a part of who we are. And it might become this thing where we can't balance everything that we're continuously getting information-wise. But eventually down the line, I think maybe 100 years from now,
we'll be able to figure it out.
We'll find a good balance. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we won't live to see those days, but
is there anything you think about other than that, as something that you're afraid of for people in our generation moving forward?
I mean,
or things that you aren't afraid of, things that you think are gonna be good.
The thing is, I think what older generations fail to see, and I don't want to sound like I know it all, but I think that there are some great people in our older generation. Some great people who have done some things to the world.
Generation ahead of us?
Yeah, generation ahead of us.
Or behind us.
No, yeah, our parents' generation.
Older people, yeah. Generation X.
So when you're talking about their generation, they're we did all these things. But they also had a ton of really bad people. And it wasn't, it's because of the years that they grew up in. They had their
eras.
Their era of, in the 60s and the 70s had its flaws, too. It sparked creativity, but at the same time,
as shown in Mad Men.
And hippies, I don't think that was a thing until around that time.
Yeah, late 1960s.
So, we have hippies in our generation. They're just called,
hipsters.
Kids. Hipsters, exactly. I think you should take us as a package. I think some of us will lead this new generation, some of us won't. Nothing, not to knock off anybody, but that's just, want you take look at us as a package, and you can make all these assessments 100%, and you have every right to, but nothing will really hold true until we become older, and then you could see what we've done, not what you think we're going to do.
Right. So maybe we're not too helpless.
I don't know. And then maybe we're all going to fall flat on our faces. I could be completely wrong. Maybe I'm just
and with the
stupid,
environment, who knows?
That's true. I'm just a dumb and optimist.
It's got to rain in California eventually, huh?
Yeah. Or how about here? Our dear...
Man, my grass is yellow as shit.
Our farmer friend Zach, who owns a greenhouse,
we're getting him on here, too, eventually.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be in the next episode, probably.
Maybe, who
knows? He's a really interesting character.
Yeah, he is a character.
a man that was born in this town, so you would think is as adaptable or like everyone else as you could possibly be.
He had his own little deal.
But he could be just arguably as different
as
in terms
you.
Of a come up as I am. Yeah.
And
which
we'll
is ironic because he
is white.
Textbook,
as white.
His come up is 100% different than mine, yeah. But in a lot of ways, it's the same.
Well, Stav, Mustafa, Mufi, I thank you for being the first. We gotta wrap this up.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
I'm off on a couple tangents. There.
No, it's fine.
It's not like I'm pretty much covered everything. Or anything.
Yeah, it's not like they're deep seated.
Yeah.
What are you doing today?
What am I doing today?
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna clean my room.
Yeah.
And then,
what was your first phone?
Yeah. It was a Samsung flip phone, no camera.
I meant to ask you that at the beginning.
That's fair.
Hey. Samsung flip phone, no camera. How old were you?
No camera.
Yeah, my first one was like a Nextel walkie-talkie with no camera.
Like, what the...
I remember when I heard I got it, my second one was a camera.
Same.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
But like, it was
so
shitty,
bad.
Though. I didn't
Such
really use it.
Such a bad camera, yeah.
It was sixth grade. I was pretty lucky.
Yeah, sixth grade, same.
Yeah, and then...
How many phones do you think you've had? In your life.
Well, I'm pretty proud to say, hold on really quick, that I was one of the first iPhoners. I got my first iPhone
yes.
freshman year of high school.
Yeah, because you were AT&T.
Yeah, it was a iPhone 3.
Yeah.
G maybe? No, it was just iPhone 3. But I had all those iPhones from iPhone 3, and then I had like the chocolate.
Yeah.
Middle school. Didn't have the juke because I was
How
smart
many phones,
enough.
Not like different types of phones, but like phones like
in
through
general?
Breaking, do you think
oh,
you had? Like
yeah.
over 10?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, do you
yeah,
think
over
10?
For sure.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
But
I wouldn't be a millennial if I wasn't over 10.
Oh, I think that's a good way to end it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks for coming. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So long.
Have a great Labor Day.
Get out of my room. Have a great... Okay. This probably isn't coming going on Labor Day, but that's... No.
Well, it's today, so...
All right.
Good night.
Peace.
Okay, everyone, that is our show. That's our first episode. Thanks to Mustafa for that. I did not realize how many times I say like. Or at least during that interview, I guess I was a little nervous. I promised to try to be a better interviewer and a better communicator in the future. But yeah, thanks to Stav again. Some funny he said to me after the interview, we were listening back to some of it, and something he said about the ISIS thing was, you know, if I was in a part of the world that was more accessible to the reach of ISIS, I would be found and killed for having said what I said. So yeah, but anyway, thanks to him again, and thanks to Adam Melcher, who provided me with the music that you are currently hearing. Adam Melcher is an artist from New Jersey, Pequannock, New Jersey as well, and he's going to be appearing on The Voice on September 21st, which is awesome. And yeah, so check him out on Twitter at Adam Melcher. Check out his SoundCloud page and his Facebook page, all at Adam Melcher, whatever. Because yeah, he's got some pipes. But yeah. Thank you. Thanks for listening. And hopefully we'll be able to get another episode up soon. So yeah, so long.